Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the Wolves Fancast. Joining me this evening to discuss, I'm delighted to say, a return to winning ways. You've got myself, Ryan Hooper, and also we've got Adam Price, we've got Andy Gillard and Jordan Russell. How are we doing, gents?
All good, thanks. Hoops, yourself?
Doing good, doing good. What people listening won't realise is we had a few technical issues. I say we, which is unfair. It's just me. So we're a little bit late coming onto board, but we're literally recording this sort of just half an hour or so after the game this evening, which we'll talk about in a moment. So we'll break the game down in terms of the details within the game. But if I take you back to earlier on this evening when the team came out. Now, Nuno made three changes in total for the first starting 11 following the draw against Burnley. In came Johnny Otto, Matt Doherty, and Leander Dendonca. Out came Vinagre, Sace and Jota. What were your initial thoughts on the team as that was announced? If I go to yourself, Adam, first.
I guess when we're looking, probably, I was probably more interested in Sace going out for Dendonca, I suppose, because you look at Johnny coming back in, you think, well, that's probably a given, seeing as how he started all season. So no shock there. Same for Doherty as well. I guess the talking point really out of those three is around Sace, and whether or not Nuno thought that from their previous meetings with Palace, where Zaha might have given him a bit of a tough time, and I think hopefully my memory serves me right, but I think he might have got sent off before against Palace, I think. So potentially that was in his mind. That's the only reason why I can think of, because normally Sace has been relatively solid in that position. And well, I say relatively solid. You know, people talk about him being most underrated player in the team, etc., etc. So there's no real massive concerns over his form. So that was really the biggest talking point for me. But we know Dendonca can do, you know, a solid enough job, you know, wherever, you know, his two favourite positions. So, happy to take Nuno's deal on that one. And, you know, he did a solid enough job when during the game as well. So, interesting to see whether that continues for the final game of the season or whether Sace comes back in, but we'll wait and see on that one.
And for you, Andy, as Price, who mentioned there, that was sort of the headline change, wasn't it, there? And Adam was right. I was just checking that myself in the sort of reverse fixture. Then Sace was sent off in that game. Was that part of his thinking, or was it a reflection of Sace generally in terms of form, or just a little bit more of a tinkering from what was arguably... subjective, I know, perhaps a disappointing point against Burnley last time round?
Personally, I think it was possibly just a bit of tinkering to try and freshen things up. Obviously, we've conceded a few late goals recently. Not that Sace has been bad or at fault for any of them, but he hasn't been his usual solid self. And we know that Bolly generally prefers it on the left-hand side of the three. So I can see why he's made that decision, just to move Bolly back, give Dendonca a run out at centre-half and just freshen things up a little bit. Like you say, that was the headline change. I felt a little bit sorry for Vinagre to not get a few more minutes tonight, but obviously I know we'll come on to Johnny's contributions eventually. But I thought Vinagre did all right against Burnley, didn't let himself down defensively and offered something decent going forward.
Jordan, and just finally, before we move on to the game itself, again, same question to you. What were your thoughts on the team selection? Was it what you expected, or similar to Andy, did you think anyone was unfortunate to be left out?
Dendonca's been really good the last few games, and he's very, you know, very reliable, very dependent. I know you're a massive fan of him, Hoops, as well. So I think it was just the fact of rewarding Dendonca with the start, and, you know, it was in the back three tonight, and I don't think he put a foot wrong all night, really. And I'd say for Dents as well, how he's been, you know, in his last couple of games, well, sorry, that we've seen him, like, yeah, he definitely looks like he's settling in now. And I think that after that Burnley performance, I thought he, you know, he more than justified a start. So, yeah, I think form-wise, it's arguably probably our best 11, you'd say. And yeah, I wasn't too surprised by it.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? And yeah, I hail my colours to the mast with Dendonka, and I always like to see him get a game because, you know, I think he's worth a shirt. But it's a difficult one because it's either a tactical decision in terms of who we're up against, it's the form of the midfield, and Sace hasn't done anything particularly wrong recently, I don't feel. Yes, it was a clean sheet tonight, and we haven't had one for a while, but I won't put a lot of significance into that because, let's be honest, when we talk about the game, they didn't have a lot to do, did they, really, defensively. But we'll move on to the game. A game really of few chances. I think it started off, I think, within the first minute, they got into our box, had a little bit of possession. But as the game moved forward, it was pretty even. You could argue the case for either side being on top in the first half. But on the 41st minute, as it was, Podence got his first goal for the club. Talk us through the goal. Fantastic movement, I think, from Moutinho and Doherty on the recall as well. And Podence on the spot with a header. Ad, what do you think?
Well, yeah, you're right. The first half was a bit of a tough watch, to be honest. The players looked like they'd just met each other for most of the game. But yeah, with the goal, I mean that Moutinho flick was something of a porn flick. That was, it was lovely, like proper top shelf stuff. That nice little flick, just the way that he saw. I mean, Doherty, I think he said himself after the game, he knows to keep making those runs. And obviously, I'm delighted as well that Podence has got a goal. Like you said, Hoops, that turn of phrase, I've put my colours to his mast as well for Podence to champion him, really, to get a game. And I'm glad that he's continuing to get his chance to show what he can do. Because again, I thought he was our most exciting player. So I was just delighted for him. I mean, he won't get an easier one to nod it over the line, but it just shows that I think I remember before the game, before the goal as well, he tried the old R2 shot with a bicycle kick as well. So he's got the confidence flowing with him already. And I think I said before that it seems almost as that Nuno's quote unquote done the Dendonka with him, and that he's kept him waiting, kept him hungry, gave him the odd game, you know, certainly in the Europa League. And we're now starting to see that bear fruit now with him. But yeah, just a well-worked goal. And the beauty of it was is that we pounced upon a Palace error as well. So I can't remember who it was, but the ball was given away. And that's where our move started. So it was just lovely, well-worked goal.
And I think, Andy, Bryce was right to mention Podence there, because I think for me, he looked the most likely. But also I think Jimenez as well had a good start. He seemed to be trying to create something for himself, because there wasn't a lot for any of the front players first half.
Yeah, to be honest, that's what I like about Raul, and what I've liked about Podence early doors is the fact that they seem to see things that others don't see. So they might see a player move and they just think, okay, it might be difficult, but let's just try it. So, you know, when the ball goes out.
Was that Oasis there, Andy? Was that?
It was a little bit, wasn't it?
We see things, aren't we?
Yeah. but, you know, when you get the ball out to Traore, it's going to be head down, run, try and cross it into the box. But when the ball comes wide to Podence, he might cut inside, go out the outside, try a ball over the top. And it keeps the opposition guessing. They're never quite sure what he's going to do. And you need that bit of a magic. But with Raul tonight, he was doing the same sort of job. But I felt he played a little bit deeper than he normally does. He was a bit more withdrawn, which gave that freedom to Podence to cause some havoc.
And Jordan, your thoughts on a pretty average first half for us? How did you see the first 45?
shit, wasn't it? Let's be honest about it. Yeah. Let's not put it up, you know what I mean? nothing went on and we were dreadful, really, for 40, like I say, 40 minutes of that half. We were, arguably as bad as we've been for a very long time. But it was a bit of magic, really. You know, Moutinho got his pitching wedge out, about 25 yards out, played a flop shot to Doherty. And, yeah, it was a lovely move. And I'm glad, you know, Potence, you know, he's broke his duck. Managed to get his head on one, which must have been about 1,000 to 1 if you wanted a bet on Potence to score with a header. But, yeah, like I say, I'm glad he scored. He was lively all night, deserved his goal. And he might be able to put a selfie on social media now of his misses.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a common theme that if you follow sort of Twitter at the moment. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned, how can I put this, let's go from a flop in the first half to something a little bit harder in the second, because on 67 minutes it was Johnny who gave us a little bit of protection, because up until that point, again, what do you think, guys? Similar to the first half, there wasn't much in it, but I think it was a case of did it feel like we needed that second goal?
Well, Johnny's more of he normally plays much more of a protective sheath role, doesn't he, in the team? And I thought he was a good tip of the attack for that move. We can keep this going all night if you want.
Yeah. He was penetrative. Yeah. Yeah, I thought the way he took that goal was ridiculous as well. Like, it kind of reminded me of Sylvain Ebanks-Blake, that turn and shot. Not something I expect of a left back. It was incredible. But I think when we came out, when we came out the second half, we seemed to put those sloppy passes to one side. Whereas in the first half, we were the architects of our own downfall at times. Whereas in the second half, we just stopped all that shit and just got on with getting the ball down and moving it around.
And George, from you, I guess one person we haven't mentioned there is Traoré. Again, second half with his involvement with a goal. A good second half performance, I think, from Adama.
Yeah, definitely. I think that partly of the second half was, I don't want to say Palace give up, but they were really passive, weren't they, second half? They didn't really... you can tell they're on the beach, as it were. They weren't. I don't think they were at it really. Traoré. Yeah, he had flashes. I think first half just wasn't great, like anyone really. But yeah, second half he definitely grew into the game a fair bit. The one thing I did like was at the start of the game, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, that they were greasing him up on Vaseline on his arms, like a greased up pig, like sort of thing, you know what I mean? Chasing him around. Like, it must be a cracking tactic. I've never really thought about it before, but yeah, that must make it even harder for him to stop if he's like got Vaseline all on his arms as well.
I'm just imagining that job advertisement, Wolverhampton Wanderers require a greaser for trial, right?
Yeah, must bring your own tub of Vaseline.
there's quite a few bit in this pod already, isn't there? Okay. But no, I think in summary, gents, yeah, it was... We did what we needed to do, didn't we, I think, on reflection. It was a game where there wasn't a lot in it, I don't think.
It's strange, isn't it, when you play these mid-table teams where their season's already over, because... by and large, a team that is in mid-table, you never know what you're going to get, do you? Because they're in mid-table for a reason. Mm. It's so the adage goes, they will win some and they also will lose some, otherwise they wouldn't be in mid-table. So, obviously the main thing for Palace is that they're on a six-game losing streak coming into us, which gives you the impression that they've long since give up before now. And they do look a team... Well, let's not sugarcoat it. They looked a bit shit, really, didn't they? Let's be honest. Palace, they didn't look as if they offered much at all. Their one main player, Zaha, he's probably going to go anyway. And maybe so would the manager at the end of the season. So it's always a bit strange, because the common cliche is that you're playing against a team that nothing to play for. They might just play with the handbrake off and you could get a much tougher opponent out of it. But just wasn't the case tonight. They weren't really there. It's the same way as Everton were. They weren't really. There's only really one team on the pitch, to be honest, bar a few little burst from Palace. So, but no, yeah, with the goal, Adama was great. He made it. He just powered his way past the two fullbacks, and yeah, I was fully expecting Johnny to try and lay it off to Raul when he did his little slow motion Cruyff turn in the area. But no, fair play. Yeah, cracking finish for Johnny. I think that's an amazing finish, really.
I got to admit, I did expect a bit better of Palace. I know MacArthur and McCarthy aren't the most mobile of players, but they can pick a pass. They're defensively sound. And obviously, when you've got Zaha and Ayew up front, they're a couple of tricky players, but they never laid a glove on our back three, really. And other than pissing and moaning all game, they offered absolutely nothing, that front pair. Really quite disappointing. They'd have been better off with Benteke, which is saying something, to be honest.
The most exciting thing for Zaha all game was what boots he was wearing.
That pissed me off. They were talking about that non-stop. I was like, shut the fuck up and get on with the game.
We saw a good close-up, didn't we?
They've even got a player cam on the guy running off into Sir Jack's to get another two pairs of boots for him. They still weren't the right ones.
Well, in terms of Palace, you know, we can only judge them on the games we see them. But someone who certainly is more well versed in terms of Palace and their season and how they viewed the game is the next gentleman we've got joining us today. Delighted he's joining us. So he's currently in the waiting room, which is a virtual waiting room. So it's not a waiting room with a fish tank and some shit magazines. It's in a virtual waiting room. So I'm going to try and admit him now.
How are you doing, gents?
You're in, Jack. Thanks for joining us. We're just mid-record. We exchanged a couple of messages earlier, and Jack was sort of, I guess, set the scene with it. He thought he'd be discussing a 3-0 defeat, basically, which I guess perhaps, and I'm sure Jack will pick this up himself, will probably set the scene in terms of where he sees Palace at the moment. Obviously, we've only seen you twice in theory, sort of live, and from what we see, you're the Palace fan from the five-year plan, you know the club well. Let's touch on the game, and we can do an overview of Palace, but how did you view the game, first of all, tonight?
Very slow start from both teams. It kind of returned to the pace of that first weekend after restart, where the ball was being knocked around quite nicely by both teams, but with very little threat. And the only chance I can really remember before your goal was when Schlupp went through after Wilf set him free and just put it past the post, which was a good effort and a nice bit of play by us. We you know, knocked the ball around quite nicely, but with very, very little threat on your goal. But I felt we contained your threat quite well and felt that you guys had a number of gears that you could have gone through if you'd really wanted to. And then obviously the goal happens and Townsend, you know, plays a pass which you're told to not play when you're, you know, 8, 9 or 10, not to play it across your box, even if you've got defenders behind you. And as soon as the ball fell the way of Moutinho, who I'd like to make a little bit of a song and dance about in a minute. As soon as the ball came to him, I just sensed danger in his lovely weighted pass, found Doherty and then found Pedence in the middle. And it's 1-0 for in a half where really I don't think you'd properly turned up, to be honest.
No, I think that's fair. And I don't think there was much in the game. And I think it's a subjective call, but you could arguably say Palace could have been the better side first half. There wasn't a lot in that game. No. And I agree with you in terms of how I saw Palace, and we were just talking there because we didn't know what sort of Palace we would get, because when you play a side at this end of the season where the league placings are pretty determined, you don't know if that will give you more freedom or, you know, but obviously you're in bad form, which but you look controlled, you looked organised, and as you say, and I guess from your perspective, it was unfortunate that you were containing us and it wasn't really our good work, although it was once Moutinho was in possession, that led to that first goal.
That's the frustration. Then that kind of set the scene for the second half. And I would like to put a missing persons report out for 11 people in red and blue for the second half, because we just didn't come out. We didn't get going. The fiasco about Wilf's boots were about as exciting as it got for Palace in the second half, and you know, it really could have been wrapped up early doors. You know, hands could have been shook at the start of the second half, and we could have just saved everyone's time. We didn't go forward. We didn't put the ball around the pitch with any sort of pace or endeavour. We looked impotent throughout the whole second half. And to be honest, when the second goal came, all it did was just really add a bit of gloss to the victory for you guys. It didn't really add any greater security to the victory because I didn't really think we posed any threat to the 1-0 lead you had already. I will struggle to see us getting anything out of Sunday with Spurs coming to Selhurst. So it's quite likely we'll finish the season with 8 defeats on the bounce. It's interesting the point you make about you don't know what you're going to get with a team that is secure, and we were secure with these 8 games to go. Once we beat Bournemouth in the first game back, security was pretty much there, and another season in the Premier League was there to be had and secured. Unfortunately, with Roy Hodgson, you do know what you're going to get as a Palace fan. You know that even if it's off the back of a defeat or off the back of a victory, you're likely to see the similar group of players playing the same sort of way as they do week in, week out. I mean, part of that's to do with Hodgson's rigidity when it comes to team selection and tactics. But, you know, to be fair to the guy, he hasn't got a great deal of depth to that squad. In terms of our attacking threat tonight, we're only missing one player that would otherwise have featured, which was Benteke. So it's not as though we can point to a long list of injuries in terms of our attacking threat when you're only missing one player from who you ordinarily look to pose a threat to the opposition. So, you know, a lot of work needs doing to that squad in the summer. There's some dead wood, but there are gaps in terms of quality, energy and youth, which we hope the club will address in the summer. But we've had disappointing transfer windows previously where we've hoped that would happen and it just hasn't. So, yeah, fairly easy victory for you guys tonight. And I doubt you probably would have had many easier wins once, particularly once you went one ahead.
Yeah, I think, after the first goal in terms of how it was set. You mentioned there, Jack, about Moutinho. Did you want to comment in terms of how you see him as a player?
Always loved him. First saw him play for the Portuguese national team at Euro 2008. And just when you see a player and you just fall in love with him. And I did with him that night. I think they were playing a group game. They ran out quite easy victors that night. And this is going back 12 years and he's... You know, I followed him throughout his career, and he's just stayed as consistent throughout his career as again he showed tonight. He's just a class act on the ball. His leadership shines through. I think Neves is obviously benefiting from playing with him. It'd be interesting to see what happens when Moutinho ultimately leaves the team, whether that's through age or selection, to see whether Neves continues to progress. I suspect he will, because he's a top class act in himself, but. There's something about Moutinho, just lovely to watch. Kind of similar to someone like Santi Cazorla, who had his spell at Arsenal. Just lovely to watch on the ball, and you can just see their influence throughout the team, even when they haven't got the ball. And as I said, as soon as he got the ball, once we'd given the ball away just before half time, I just knew we were in trouble because he doesn't waste the ball. And to have a player of that quality at your club must be an absolute blessing every week to see him turn it on. I presume he's as consistent as I see it, but you guys obviously may see it slightly differently.
No, he isn't, and gents, you can join in with this, but you know, we could talk about Moutinho all night. But, and I think that the thing is with Moutinho, when other clubs or say if we do anything with national stations, they'll always ask us about Neves. They'll always ask us about Jimenez, but Moutinho doesn't get as much as a mention. So it's refreshing to hear because consistently he's got it. I mean. Don't get me wrong, we've had some bad players, but he's probably the best player I've seen in a Wolves shirt because of that class and that poise and that calmness. And I think our concern is probably the fact that we've got Gibbs White behind him who you know, I'm not going to make any comparisons to. We will at some point need a replacement, and you don't replace Moutinho, I get that, because of the quality he has, but filling that void... Jens, I don't know what your thoughts are on Moutinho. It's nice to hear an opposition view because he doesn't, you know, if you look at the credentials, as Jack's aware of, and you look at his career, it's amazing how conditioned he is, but he perhaps doesn't get the recognition that Neves gets. And I don't know if that's because Neves scores worldies, but, you know, up until this season, Moutinho's really been the focal point in midfield for ourselves, hasn't he?
Yeah, it has. I mean, last season, Moutinho was just outstanding. And I know a few other players were obviously adjusting to life in the Premier League, but I think Neves he did struggle for probably the first 6 months of last season. So it was a good job we had Moutinho so he could bring the team together and add some cohesion.
And what a player as well to have to bring for the youth of our team to look up to as a mentor as well. And the question around replacement is obviously a valid one, because he's going to be 34 later on in the year. So he's obviously not going to be the future of this team. But so there's a wider question of who we look to bring in as a natural replacement for him. But yeah, at the minute, you know, he's very hard to drop or leave out of the team at the minute, just because he's that metronome that just keeps us ticking over from game to game. And yeah, like I say, he's one that any prospective younger player in the team, like a Jordao or Gibbs White, you know, what a player to have around training every day.
Yeah, fantastic influence, I guess, around the place. And he's also got that other side to him where if he needs to kick someone, he'll certainly kick someone, which I also have a lot of time for. So,
Does what needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Tonight wasn't the toughest challenge he'll have tonight, but his class was there for all to see. And I guess with his, you know, progression in years, it'll be down to the club to manage him. And if you've got someone like Gibbs White, who I like when I've seen him, I think he's clearly got something about him. He drives forward, he's good with the ball. If you could perhaps give him more time and manage Moutinho's minutes, then that's the best of both worlds, really. But if you need to get the checkbook out and get someone else in, then albeit. But, you know, for me, he's just a lovely player. And the fact he's now in the Premier League means I get to see more of him. But, you know, when he's putting your team to the sword with such passes as he did in the first half, it's a little bit bittersweet. But I have to put my hands up and say that he was a class act. I think Fletcher and McManaman in commentary, you know, put a lot of praise on Traore, and rightly so. He was a threat, and Tyreek Mitchell will certainly sleep well tonight. But in terms of the influence of the game, I can't really look past your midfield too, and Moutinho in particular.
Yeah, and just to intercept there on, you know, I thought that he played actually quite well, that Tyreek Mitchell, considering his first start. I mean, Traore's given more established fullbacks more of a run around than he did him tonight, so he definitely looks like one for the future as well.
He's been trapped in because of injury, but there are high hopes for him, and it's pleasing to see him get a go in the first team. I think with Hodgson, he's quite rigid in his team selection, and even Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who last summer went for 50 million, is now, you know, Manchester United's first choice right back. He was only given a go due to a sequence of injuries. So, you know, for a player to get a go, it's more a, you know, a sequence of fortune. But Mitchell has got the starting berth when he, you know, could easily have given it to Riedewald tonight. So it's pleasing to see him start, and it's nice to hear that you thought he had a decent game, particularly against someone as potent as Traore. But again, he just doesn't surprise me when I see, there was one where Traore put it 10 yards in front of him and beat the fullback for pace, and then still managed to get the ball when really he had no right to get the ball in. And that's what Traore does. Whenever I see him, whether it's against Palace or anyone else, he gets balls into the box when other wingers just don't. His physical attributes, you know, are a challenge in itself, let alone the quality he has on the ball in terms of beating defenders and his delivery into the box. And you can see why he's put something on the plate for Jimenez throughout the season. And, you know, I'm sure you guys are discussing plenty about whether you can keep him this summer. I'd hope you guys would be able to keep him, because I think he's learning a lot, and he's playing games, which you can't obviously guarantee if you then go and play, you know, for whether it's a top four club in this country or he goes back to Spain. He's got it good at the moment. He's under a very good manager. I like your manager a lot. He's a good operator and clearly knows how to win games in the Premier League, which is invaluable. But, you know, before Traore looks to maybe move on, I think he should consider where he is at the moment, because I don't think there's many better places in certainly English football for him to be right now.
No, absolutely. And of course, we echo that. But I think, you know, you have to look at it objectively as well. And I do think for his development, you know, there's two parts to Traore, this and latter part of last season, you know. And the components are, one is Nuno and one is Traore himself. And, you know, they've got a fantastic relationship and has found that ability whereby so much has been talked about Adama, where, you know, he'd had the pace and power, but didn't just stop and kind of, okay, now this is what I need to do. But, you know, the assists and delivery and consistency is fantastic. Before we round up with yourself, Jack, we do hope you get a good result against Spurs on the weekend, because that may have...
I thought you might say that.
bearing on ours. Guys, have you got any other questions in relation to Palace for Jack?
Yeah, I just got one. for you, Jack. I know you're from the five-year plan. I'm just wondering, what's the plan for this summer? Because I'm going to fairly assume that Zaha will be off. Don't know where, but I'm going to assume he'll be sold. And what's the rebuild going to look like this summer for you? And also, do you think that even Hodgson will stay, or do you think they'll shake hands and walk away from each other and try and get a younger model in, so to speak, or a more progressive manager?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, the situation with Hodgson is we understand that just previous to lockdown, a one-year extension was signed for next season. But from what I've heard, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that he will be the manager next season. So whether or not that was to provide a bit of security and he was making noises about not having the security into next season, I don't know. I think they would need to think long and hard about replacing Hodgson. You know, we're in a terrible run at the moment, but to give the bloke, you know, the credit he deserves, he took over a club that had, after the Frank de Boer debacle, four games in, and then his first three games, we didn't win or we didn't even score a goal. So effectively, over a 31-game season, we were safe with a few games to go and were looking pretty good by the end of that season. And then in his two full seasons, we've never really looked like being in any sort of danger of relegation. So the club needs to be careful. If they do ask him to go and shake hands, as you say, they need to be assured that the appointment they're about to make is the right one. The last time they had a summer to make an appointment, they appointed Frank de Boer, and as I just said, that was a bit of a disaster. So they would hopefully have learned from that experience and seen, you know, what the risks are to that. I don't know who's out there at the moment. If you want to, you know, see who's out there across the continent, then Palace could do that. But with Hodgson, you know what you're going to get. Him and Ray Lewington are a very, very good partnership and very organised. One of the, you know, highlights of lockdown has been hearing Ray Lewington just shout at very highly paid professional footballers throughout lockdown. So I think Palace are going to release an album of his great tips during lockdown. So that's been good. And then in terms of Wilf, you know, Wilf is superb. You didn't see the best of him tonight. And to be honest, we haven't seen the best of him this season, partly probably because of the tactics that Roy's deployed at times, but just hasn't clicked for him as the same way it did last season. But, you know, I could probably draw parallels in terms of the value that we have on him that you guys have on Traore. You know, the sort of sum that you'd be looking for if Traore was to go is similar to what we have with Wilf. It's probably inflated in terms of what their real value is, but it's the value to the club that is selling the player. And that's, I think, the key with Wilf is nobody is likely, particularly on the back of this season's form and output, nobody is likely to pay what Steve Parish would consider the true value of Wilf. That true value is probably reduced on what it was last year, given the form he's had and the fact that we're another year into his contract. I think I'm right in saying that he's got two full years after this season finishes. So obviously, if we go in towards next summer where he's only got 1 year left, then that obviously poses its own risks. I think there's money to invest in the squad regardless of selling Wilf. I think there's two separate points. I would suspect Wilf will start at Palace next season. I don't think the clubs are going to be lining up for him that he might hope, and even if they were, I don't think they'd be willing to pay what we were. And if they, you know, if you're looking at clubs that have got cash to spend, with the greatest respect to Everton, and I say that as the son of a devout Evertonian, or Newcastle United, if their takeover gets the go-ahead and they've got cash to spare, is that really the step up for Wilf? You know, he's got a young family in South London. He's very attached to the local area. He's a different bloke completely to the teenager that went to Manchester. So I'm not going to draw parallels with who he was then. He could make the move up north if he wanted to, but is he going to do that for the sake of a bit more money? I don't know. You know, you'd have to ask him. But the key really is anyone going to pay what is value to the club? But in terms of Palace's overall strategy, you know, youth and some energy is much needed in that squad. And if they can move on some of the bigger wages and salaries in the squad, then that would be great. And by that, I mean the likes of Mamadou Sakho, who tonight lasted 15 minutes. And he's only, I think tonight was his 11th start of the season. And for someone that's on the money he's on, within the budget that a club like Palace have, it's not really sustainable moving forward. He needs to be playing, you know, a bit like Connor Cody, every minute of every game to be justifying that sort of salary. So I think they'll be looking to move some of our bigger earners on. And invest in some youth and some energy, really.
Yeah, I mean, the few times I've seen Palace this season, you have looked like a team who's probably come to the end of its natural life and it needs some investment, really. And I thought you may have done that with the money you got from Aaron Wan-Bissaka, but I don't think you've really bought in enough to really freshen the squad in the last 12 months.
No, and in fact, the replacement for Wan-Bissaka was meant to come in January in the form of your much-loved neighbours, right-back Nathan Ferguson, was meant to come in on a very cheap deal, but he suffered a knee injury, I believe, which put paid to that. But the rumour is that's likely to go ahead this summer. So we didn't even really replace Wan-Bissaka, let alone invest the money we made from him. So I don't know where that money's gone. I don't know if that's still sitting there in a pot ready for someone to invest in others. But yeah, I think that summary is spot on, really. I think we're at the end of our natural life. Players like, you know, James McArthur, who's been an absolute stalwart for Palace effectively since promotion in 2013. I think he came in 2014, an absolute trooper, week in, week out. But Roy's played him pretty much every minute since the restart, and it just doesn't have the same impact as he did. And for most games since restart, Wilf's been our youngest starter, and he's just coming up to his 28th birthday. So, you know, that sums it up, really. And I really hope there is some sort of wheeling and dealing done in the summer just to kind of add a bit of youth and energy to that squad.
That's great. No, Jack, no. You know, after a game and a performance, I know you perhaps may have anticipated the result, but it's still really appreciated that you've come on. And it's always great to speak to fans, because I think ultimately we're all sort of the same, and, you know, we only see things in one way, but you see it through, you know, the team, and it gives us extra sort of content in terms of the team we've come up against. So really, really appreciate your time, Jack, and hopefully we'll speak to you further down the line.
Yeah, anytime, guys, and wish you the best of luck on Sunday. Would like you to finish above Spurs, if only to stop another Portuguese manager being the highest Portuguese manager in the league. And also wish you well with the European campaign when that restarts as well.
Brilliant. No, thanks so much,
Jack.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And that was Jack from the 5-year plan podcast. Thought he spoke really well, gents. It was refreshing to hear someone objectively talk about their team and our team as well.
Yeah, I quite like that we've been getting these fans on post game rather than in the build up to it. We've actually got something we can discuss and get stuck into.
Real. Well, thank you to Jack. It meant
rewind.
It's a good job as an edit. I might keep that in anyway. That might stay in. Be like, wait for a little bit. What I was going to say, and I just got a message which had distracted me. So there was the slip of the lip. Was Jack was mentioning their game against Spurs, which will obviously have an impact potentially on ours, but we need to do our job against Chelsea. So we'll look at the Chelsea game after this. Okay, so in terms of the final league game, as it is for ourselves, next up is Chelsea. Oh, I'm kind of, I don't know how I feel about this one, gents. They're in good form, aren't they, Chelsea, at the moment? So it's going to be a tough game. How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, they tore Man United a new one last night, and they're obviously going to want to try and get their name in the FA Cup team sheet, so they'll be up for it come Sunday. It's going to be a tough game.
So, George, what are your thoughts on Chelsea? And also, within that question, do you think there'll be any changes for the game?
I think that it all depends on how they go to, well, on Wednesday night, as you know, against Liverpool. If they beat Liverpool, I think we'll probably see a weakened Chelsea team, because they'll be guaranteed top four then, and they've got the FA Cup final obviously against Arsenal to go. Sort of praying for a bit of a Chelsea win, or at least a positive result for them against Liverpool. In terms of the team selection itself, I guess it depends on scenario as to how many points we're going to need out of the game. If we need a point, I can see him going 3-5-2. For me, I wouldn't change it. Like, you know, myself and Stu got a few pelters for the Sheffield United podcast. But it's all about intent for me. And I think that we're a good enough team to back ourselves and should have enough trust in our ability and our system that we go and play 3-4-3 and we go and get a positive result there. I don't think there's any reason why we can't go and get a positive result there, considering, you know, some of the results we've had this season. I don't fear Chelsea particularly, but they are a good team. Lampard's got them going. And I do think Chelsea are going to be a better team next year than they are this year. So, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. But I always fancy to get a positive result no matter what.
And yourself, finally, what are your thoughts looking ahead to the Chelsea game?
Yeah, so I echo George's sentiments really there. I mean, I hope that there will be... Well, hopefully they'll come up against a disinterested Liverpool side, really, who, you know, I don't think they can get any more points totals for a Champions. Get that win, so they get third place in the bag, which I know in theory it sounds great. You know, they win, get third place, and they can rest some players for. The next our league game and then get ready for the cup final. But in reality, I know sometimes it doesn't really work that way, does it? He might just play the first team again because he wants players to prove themselves worthy of a cup final spot. So it can go both ways, really. But as far as the game itself goes, they're quite suspect at the back. I think Chelsea, I think that's probably their biggest weakness. They've got a plethora of forward players and midfield players, all of whom, you know, got great quality. And they've got even more quality coming in as well in the next transfer window. But I always think at the back, they're a bit suspect. So I think that's where we can potentially get a bit of joy out of it. So I'd line all four of our forwards up and I'll play them all against Chelsea. They just play them all. Raul, Jota, Pedence, Neto, get them all playing. Just go five up front. No, in all seriousness, I would stick to 3-4-3. I wouldn't go back to 3-5-2. I'd just go 3-4-3. Keep the same three as today, to be honest. I'd keep Pedence, Raul, and Adama, and then hopefully that should be enough because we know full well that Spurs are going to beat Palace. I can't see anything other than a Spurs win against Palace. So we do need to deliver the goods against Chelsea.
No, absolutely. I mean, so I'll push you all for predictions. I'll push you all for predictions in terms of the game itself and sort of final league position. Andy, if I can come to you first. How do you see the game as a scoreline, and where do you envisage us finishing our league campaign?
Oh, it's a horrible question.
It is a horrible question.
It really is. Because, I mean, Spurs have been hot and cold for most of the season, but they've finally clicked into gear. And we saw tonight that Palace are no great shake, so I expect them to win. But we saw what Chelsea did to us earlier in the season, and it's not going to be easy, even if they do put out their second string. They have got some decent kids coming through. I don't want to be a pessimist, though. I think we'll draw, and I think Palace will do us a favour. So I think we'll finish where we are now. I think we'll finish in sixth.
George, what are your thoughts in terms of the game as a scoreline, just briefly, and perhaps where that may see us finish the league campaign?
I think we'll draw as well, personally, because I think Chelsea are going to have to get a result technically, but I think, you know, Man U are playing Leicester, aren't they? So I think we'll get a point out of it, and I think we'll end up. We might end up coming. I think sixth. Still, I do think sixth. I mean, the good thing tonight is at least we're guaranteed to come in the top seven now. I think, or we can't finish any lower than eighth, should I say? But you can just see us finishing seventh, can't you? And then having to watch the FA Cup final like we did, and Watford get battered like we did last season. So the one thing I will say is though, is that, you know, if for whatever reason we don't get European football out through our league position this year, from where we got ourselves to, I think we've only got ourselves to blame, really, with a couple of bad results. But yeah, I'm still optimistic that we'll come in the top six for me.
Adam, just finally for yourself.
I think we're going to see a bit of a slobber knocker on the final day, and I think we're going to be on the right side of a 5-goal thriller.
Ooh.
At the Bridge. I think we're going to win 3-2. Don't ask me why. Call it blind faith. Call it just stupidly optimistic or whatever. I don't know. But I just think that it's just going to go balls to the wall last game. And I think we're going to win 3-2. In reality, like you say, what might actually happen is what George said there, that we'll all be glued to the cup final praying for a Chelsea win. But I don't know. I just got some feeling that it's just all going to be carnage on our last game. I just think there's going to be a few goals in it. So, yeah, 3-2 win and, sixth place finish.
I've asked the question, so I've got to answer it as well. It's a difficult one. I'd like to think that, you know, we can get a win and also get sixth finish. There'll probably be a lot to talk about post that Chelsea game and also post the completion of the season, because as Jordan's referenced there, in terms of how it's viewed in terms of the final league position, and also I think what the implications of potentially, if we were to miss out on Europe, what that would be in terms of how we see the team. I really think it has a lot of potential positives and negatives. I think there's a lot riding on our league placing and also potentially our European ambitions as well. But we'll leave that till post-Chelsea and hope we're in a good position at that point. Before we round off for this evening, because it's getting quite a late night for ourselves recording, I just want to thank you guys for sticking with us. So we'll round off with Twitter Corner. So first question we've got here is from Zach Ruston. We mentioned this a little bit earlier, but we could perhaps pick it up. He mentioned that it's disappointing to see Jordao not getting some minutes at the end. I think he was warming up for a while and then obviously the whistle went. Could he be the long-term solution for a Moutinho replacement? What are your thoughts? I'm going to say too early to tell, isn't it, really, I would say.
I saw him play, was it Reading in the Cup? I think I saw him play. And he looked, I'm going to caveat it straight away by saying, I know it was Reading, so, you know, let's just put that by it. But he looked good. He looked like a really good player. I don't know if he was like naturally like Moutinho, like the heir to Moutinho's throne, so to speak. But he looked good. He looked like quite an exciting player and he looked decent. To be fair, I was rooting for him as well. I was willing someone to kick the ball out at the end of the game. Just give him 2 minutes, come on. We never even got that. So I felt a bit of a shame for him, because you can imagine getting what he's done, his warm-up. He's a bit psyched up, ready to come on the pitch, and he never makes it. So that was a bit of a shame. But, like you say, you can't put a definitive answer on that just yet, because we've barely seen him play. But from the few minutes that we have seen him play, you know, there's a bit of promise there.
Cool. I mean, what I'll do, because there's a few questions to rattle through. Andy, what about this one? One from Alex Moore, ex-fan Castian. You've had a call from Melinda Messenger. We'll leave that there. Asking if you'll take part in the new series of Fort Boyard. But you have to pick a partner, and it has to be a signing made during the Mick McCarthy era. Who do you pick and why? Fort Boyard, was that kind of like a Crystal Maze type program, if I remember?
Yeah, wasn't it Dirty Den as well? Didn't it have the Tigers?
Yeah.
The finger sucker, Leslie Grantham.
Well, what I'll do, I'll get a name from all three of you on this one then. So a player in the McCarthy era, if he had to be your partner in this game, who would you pick and why?
I'd go with Kevin Foley, Mr. 7 out of 10. You know what you're going to get with him. He's always going to put the effort in. He'll help you get through.
Good call.
I'll just go with Gary Breen because he's a bit of a mentalist, isn't he? And I think he'd be way too competitive for my liking, so he could do all the donkey work.
Jules, Melinda's on the phone. You've got a partner to pick. Who are you going to pick?
I'll go with Jamal Johnson.
I did not expect that one, but I want to know your reasoning.
Just because he's a bit small, wasn't he? So he'd have a low central gravity. And you know, when you get the coins at the end, I reckon he'd be able to get, he'd be like lower to like the level to be able to just grab them. He could put some in his mouth, all sorts. He can do what he wants. And I reckon Jamal Johnson, he was quick as well, wasn't he?
He was able to
run away from the Tiger. So yeah, we'll go with Jamal.
Jamal Johnson. Now, when I did this podcast at the start, and with all the technical issues we've had, I'm glad that we got to Jamal Johnson. I think for me, I'm going to go Keogh, probably similar reasons to Andy. He's going to put a shift in, isn't he? Keogh made players look good at times and kind of took the flak for it as well. So he'll put the hard graft in. So I'll go for Keogh on that one. Next one from Lynx Wolf. Three players from the first 11 that you'd replace next season. So if we look at maybe today's team as an example, or replace with Sace maybe, if you want to include him in the first 11. If you had to get rid of three, who would there be? Do you want to pick one each?
That's tough, isn't it, that?
Yeah.
I'd go... Oh, this stinks. I'd go... Only from today's 11, I'd probably go Dendonka, Doherty. This is horrible, isn't it? Cody... But I think you lose so much leadership. I'm going just footballing ability. I'd probably go with Cody, Doherty, Dendonka, but I think they're all very valuable in their own right. So, yeah, that's probably what I'd say, a push.
You'd probably lose them out of the starting 11, but you wouldn't want to lose them out of the club altogether.
No, 100% not.
And any variation to those three gents at all?
I'll just pick. We're here for the tough questions, aren't we? So we've got to answer it. I've got Matinho because of his age, and then I'd say Raul and Adama because of the money that we'd get back.
Cool.
So, and then just spend it on buying three super players.
Andy, what do you think? I think Matinho for his age, because he needs to be replaced. Jimenez again, because I think again there's an age point there. Oh, and then I'd think Doc's had a good run. So sorry, Doc.
I think quality wise, we can probably get a better defender than Cody. I like Cody, but he's a midfielder playing in defence. So maybe there. I agree on the Doc thing. Again, he's another player I really like, but he's had a very good run. He's probably never going to be worth more than he's worth now. And I don't want to say Jimenez because he's so, so important to the way we play. And I'm not sure we'd be able to find another player to replace him. It'd probably be Matinho for his age then, I'd say.
Horrible question. But as Pricey said, that's why we get paid. No, I mean, that's why we get, yeah. What we'll do, we'll close it there. In closing, just want to thank everyone who listens on behalf of all of us. Mad that this is our last home league game of the season that we're talking. And kind of, you know, from us doing these pods at the start of the season, it's pretty bonkers. I guess we're probably there or thereabouts in terms of where we may have expected in the league potentially, but the world is a little bit different than what it was then. And let's hope when we can, we'll be able to see the team live soon as well. But before then, we've obviously got the Chelsea game to look forward to, which we've talked about, and Olympiacos as well. So thanks for all your continued support. If you like what we do, please leave us a 5-star rating. We really do appreciate it. And gents, it's goodbye from Andy.
Be safe, everybody.
Mr. Price?
Goodbye, boys and girls.
And Jamel Johnson's supporter club member, Jordan Russell.
Yeah, hashtag free Jamal.
And that's us out of here. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you soon.